What's good, y'all? My name is Dylan Green, and this is Real Notes, a space dedicated to blurring the cultural and artistic lines between rap and film. I'm here to chop it up with everyone from rappers and producers to journalists and video directors about their relationship to movies and how, if at all, film inspires their craft. My guest this week is Buffalo, New York rapper, producer, and designer Che Noir. We spoke about the Creed series, Ozark, Imitation of Life, Carlito's Way, binging TV shows versus watching them weekly, why Lauryn Hill and Nas are among her favorite storytellers, coming up under Benny the Butcher and 38 Special, a handful of her best storytelling songs, and the creative process behind her latest project, Noir and Never, produced entirely by Big Ghost Limited. Come fuck with us. What's cracking, everybody? Welcome back. Welcome back to, this is the, we're almost at the end of March, or at least when y'all hear this, it'll almost be the end of March. I think this is, I don't remember the timeline anymore, but we're here. It's kind of snowing now. I think this is like the second or third time I've seen snow all year. It's kind of weird. I appreciate how warm it's been, but maybe we're all going to die in like 40 years. But my name's Dylan Green, Cinema Psy. Got a lot of names, do a lot of shit. and I'm with somebody else who also does a lot of shit. She's been running around a lot for the last, like, really the last, like, a while, but like particularly the last like 4-ish years. She's been on an incredible run that I think people are finally just now starting to really tap into. A rapper and a producer and a clothing designer, maybe kind of sort of a gym rat, not really sure. But her and Big Ghost's album, Noir and Never, is out now. It's been out for a couple days, I think, at this point. Jay, thank you so much for being here. You've been on my list for a while, so I'm very happy to have you here. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you having me.
Yeah, nah, it's been like I want to say the first time I heard your music was probably when a lot of people did, when you and Apollo put out As God Intended. That was the mm-hmm. first time I really tapped into like a full length project of yours. And I've been a mm-hmm. fan ever since. So it's been your journey's been really tight, and just, you know, like you and Grizz talk about movies and music and all sorts of bullshit. So thank you again. Like,
thank you, man. I appreciate
you. Yeah, nah, no doubt. So let me ask you the first question I ask everybody who comes on here. What was the last movie or TV show that you watched that you had a strong opinion about?
You know, the last movie I went to go see was Creed, the new one that just came out. That was the last one that I've seen. I can't say that I've seen all the Creeds. I just seen the third one. My fiance, he's a big fan of it. So we had went to go see it. And I thought it was dope. You want to know my opinion on it?
Yeah, please.
it was dope. I thought the ending was kind of predictable. Just because, like, I haven't watched all of the Creeds. But, you know, I kind of have somewhat of an idea of the focus of the story around it. The only thing that was like, it just, the ending was a little predictable, but I was debating about it with my friends, and like, I had two different ways it could have ended, and I'm like, well, I guess it could have been predictable either way, but it was still a good movie. It was a dope movie.
I haven't seen Creed 3 yet, but I saw the first one, but I haven't seen the second one. I really, really liked the first one a lot. I have no nostalgia for Rocky. I think I've seen the first three Rockies, and I enjoyed them, but they weren't movies that I like grew up enjoying. I saw them just because they were like movies you needed to see, mm-hmm. you know? Creed was something that felt like, okay, like this is kind of for me, like, as opposed to, or like not just for me, but it felt like I'm a fan of Michael B. Jordan. It's just cool to see him get like that, to get that kind of like legacy role.
Yeah, he's really talented.
Yeah, for real. And yeah, I know he directed the third one. So you know, like as so like as someone who hasn't seen the first two Creed movies, like how'd you like it just as like coming in cold, basically?
Yeah, like I said, I think it still was a dope movie. I just had my little critiques just from a, you know, just a, you know, analyzing perspective. Like I just had my critiques on the ending, but it was a dope movie. It was actually, there was a couple parts in there that were actually very emotional. Just for his character in general. But it was dope. Like I haven't seen the first two. My fiance is a huge fan. He's seen all the Rockies. Like he's into all of them. So, like it was, that movie was, you know, for him more so, he was, you know, taken aback by it, but you know, I thought it was right. Still a dope movie. And Michael B. Jordan is, I've always said this, he's a generational talent to me, just in my opinion.
Yeah, nah, I think the first time I saw him, well, I mean, I see him in The Wire because he started out on The Wire, but, or like he didn't start out on The Wire, but like that was one of his earlier, that was the first time I saw him. And then the first time I saw him like as a grown man was when he did Fruitvale Station. And
that's one of his best. That's one of his best movies. Like because like I said, I seen him for the first time really in The Wire, but like that was, I hadn't seen him in a lot of things between that time. And when Fruitvale came out, I was like, oh, and yeah, that movie was crazy.
Yeah, nah, I think I've only seen it once. Cause like it's just one of those that's like you watch it once and you never need to see it again. Just yes. Like it's just so sad, and like it's so well made, and it's Ryan Coogler's first movie ever, and like we all know their relationship at this point. Mm-hmm. It was like one of those like right place, right time, just like confluence, yes, things, and it was, yes, just like I just can't. I haven't been in the right headspace where I've wanted to. Like I'm never sitting around and thinking like I'm gonna go throw on Fruitvale Station. Like I need to relax. Like, nah.
A movie you just throw on. You gotta be in the right mind space to watch movies like that.
What was the last movie or TV show you saw that you chose, that you saw that you kind of watched for yourself?
I was like really into Ozark when like when they were a thing. Like that's probably the last show I watched. I got caught on into it late though. Like I didn't start because like when I started watching Ozark, they were on the last season. So I just binge watched the older ones. And
right,
like what the hell took me so long to start watching this? That was probably like the first show in a while that I was really like into and liked from start to finish. Like it didn't end bad, because a lot of shows that I've loved end bad. It didn't end bad. It ended really good. That was probably the last show I watched that I actually wanted to, like, you know, watch.
Mm-hmm.
Snowfall kind of fell off a little bit for a couple seasons to me. But this newer season they have is pretty good right now. So, yeah.
That's cool. That's what I've been hearing, because I'm not caught up on Snowfall yet. I think I'm like somewhere near the end of season one. I'm also starting late.
You're in a good place. It's going to start getting a little iffy. If you're like me, it's going to get iffy third season. But this season they're on now is really good, actually. This might be the best season they had in a while.
Wow. Yeah, no, because you're not the first person I've heard say that, like, they kind of, like for me, everybody's been telling me that season four is the worst one. And I'm kind of, like, bracing myself.
Yeah, it was bad. It was not good at all. It was bad.
That's cold.
Yeah.
A
fan's perspective, I'm a fan of the show. So I'm like, right. No, that wasn't up to its standards with that season, no.
Right. You know, we got to be honest with that type of stuff, because like it's cool to just like watch stuff and get caught up in the moment and, you know, like enjoy it. But it, like if it's not good, it's just, you know, like, just it's not good. Like,
yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
And yeah, no, I can appreciate people being honest about that. And Ozark is something that I never started because it reminded me so much of Breaking Bad. I'm sure it's pretty different, but kind of like you, I started Breaking Bad right when they started the last season back in, I was in college. So it must've been 2013, 2014. And like I ran through like most of the first four seasons in like a couple months. I think I watched the back half of season four. I watched like 8 episodes in a day. So like from like 12 o'clock in the afternoon until like 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, like I was so depressed. I don't know how familiar you are with Breaking Bad, but like the last half of season four is just like, it's just gut wrenching. It's so depressing.
I got to check it out. I haven't seen it. I've heard about it I've actually been meaning to check that out for a while now. I haven't, I haven't been able to check it out yet. Because like, even with Ozark, like I said, it took me a few years to get on that. So I have never, what's the other show? Game of Thrones. I haven't seen that.
Me either.
Yeah. So I know I'm hearing it's a good show. Like my fiance is on it. Like he's that's one of his favorite shows of all time, but I just haven't had the time to really sit down and focus and watch it. Like, cause I tried to watch the first season, I got distracted. So I got to get focused watching shows, you know?
I feel you. Yeah, no, that's my dad. Game of Thrones is his favorite show ever. He's like, you know, like he's the person in my life who watches every TV show and everything that like if it's out, he like if he's not working, he's on the couch like watching a TV show. Like that's just what he does. And every time he'd be like, oh, yo, like Masai, you gotta come watch Game of Thrones. And I'm like, I can't, I got work to do. We're like, I can't, I'm going somewhere. It's just like he was just like so on it, you know. Like, and like people I know who like Game of Thrones, they're like on it. So
Yeah. So I gotta, at some point, you know, I'm gonna watch it. I'm hearing it's really good. Like, and it's coming from people that I trust their opinions enough to know, okay, I'll like it enough, you know. But I'm gonna check it out, you know, some years to come, maybe near future.
Yeah. You know, it's not going nowhere. It's like it's like HBO's most popular shit. It's going nowhere.
Yeah.
So let's run it all the way back for you. What's the first movie experience you could remember having? It could be at the theater, it could be at your cousin's house, like the first time you remember watching a movie.
The first time I remember watching a movie, you know, growing up, my mom like was into movies a lot, so like one movie I do remember my mom watching a lot was like The Imitation of Life. Yeah, my mom put me onto that movie. And what was the other movie? Dang, why can't I think of it? What the heck is that other movie? When it comes to me, I'll say it, but that was one movie. Like if that movie came on TV or anything, like my mom made it a thing for us to sit down and watch that with her.
Wow. That's like
movies. But that's like one memory I have of a movie coming up. And then like, you know, like I said, when I was a kid, I was watching like a lot of cartoons and shit. So I'm sorry, can we talk?
yeah. No, this is all me. Say whatever the fuck you want.
Okay. But yeah, I was watching like a lot of cartoons and shit. I was a cartoon head. I was into like Looney Tunes and all of that. I started getting into some anime as I got older. Like, you know, my younger sisters are into it. But like, as far as my first experience with a movie, I remember vividly Imitation of Life, my mom watching that movie every chance she got. And she was tears like watching it, like crying. It was crazy.
Yo, that's wild. Cause like, I want to touch on all of that, but like, it's so bugged that you just brought up Imitation of Life, because I was just talking to my homegirl Bailey. Shout out to Bailey if you're listening. I was talking to her about this, I think like a week ago. That like I think I didn't see Imitation of Life until I saw it in I went to film school, so I saw it in film school, and like, and just like
just like what, like it felt so uncomfortable watching that movie with like 30 strangers. Cause like that movie's so sad and so emotional, and just like the whole like, and it's like, just like for anybody who doesn't know, Imitation of Life is this older melodrama from the 50s, either the 50s or the 60s, about this woman who becomes an actress, and she has she hires this woman to be her maid. They meet on a beach, and she's a black woman, a dark skinned woman, and she has this extremely light skinned daughter. And one of the major subplots of the movie is the daughter passing for white and kind of like working, you know, just kind of like working with that. And she's like ashamed of her mother and tries to, and doesn't want anyone to know she's black. Like it's a whole thing. And the movie ends with her neglecting, like outright like disowning her mother. And before they could reconnect, her mother dies. And like the final shot of the movie is this woman like crying over her mother's casket. It's like one of the saddest things I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. She lost it when her mom finally left. Like, she lost it. Like, it was crazy. She was so mean to her mom when she was alive. Like,
the
so
whole movie.
It was crazy.
Man, like, that shit wrecked me. Like, I had never, I don't, like, I really don't know that I'd ever seen a movie that sad in my life. Like, just, like, the whole idea of just, like, just falling out with your parent and not being able to make up for it because that's so scary to me. I don't like that shit. But the movie itself is great. It's a fantastic movie, really well done, really well acted. Like it's like a 50s, 60s melodrama. So I'm sure y'all could figure out what that's like. But that's a hell of a movie to just have your mom be like, hey, let's come watch Imitation of Life. Oh, yeah. Like,
that's her favorite movie still to this day. Like, that's her favorite. Bronx Tale. That's another movie my mom loves. That's Bronx Tale. I loved Bronx Tale too. That's a classic to me. Like, you know, growing up, my whole family has seen that movie, passed it down. Like, but yeah, that's another movie too. I remember watching a lot with her.
Wow, man. Imitation of Life and A Bronx Tale are two crazy family movies to watch. Like, those are like, I can't imagine watching a movie like A Bronx Tale with my family. Funny enough, but it's great movie.
They're great movies. They're good movies.
Yeah, my we had a couple traditions in my house. One we try to keep up with every year is you ever see Carmen Jones, the Dorothy Dandridge movie from I think also like the 50s or the 60s with Dorothy Dandridge and Harry Belafonte.
I haven't seen it.
It's a remake of the musical of the opera Carmen, and it's all done with like a mostly not pretty much entirely black cast. It's from the 50s and 60s, so like, you could tell the white people were writing the movie. Like you could tell by the way the dialogue moved. It's a classic to me. It's a musical. They sing a lot. Really great choreography, great acting. Very also extremely sad, but like not until the very end. It's got a pretty messed up ending, but you know, like those family tradition movies are like really important ones, cuz like I look back on, you know, like not even just for like a history lesson, cuz like my father's 70. He's turning 78 this year. So he's been alive since like the dawn of television. So like, he's always like, I used to watch this when I was younger. And like, you should see this, he's very much like, know your history type shit. So
yeah. I'm on for movies. Cause she knows she watches a lot of classic stuff. So like, I'll go to her, like, you know, for just something different, refreshing to watch. Cause like I said, I don't watch a lot of TV, just cause I don't really have the time. And, I think like with this new streaming of TV has taken like back when I was coming up, you turn the TV on, flick the channel, and that may not be your intentions to watch the movie or certain shows that come on channels like Lifetime or just any channel. But you know, you turn to that channel, you stick around, watch for like 5 to 10 minutes, and you realize, oh, this is an interesting movie. Oh, this is an interesting show. And it may be a show or a movie that you've never seen, but I think with streaming, for me, so many choices make it hard for me to find something interesting to watch sometimes.
It's overwhelming for sure. Like,
overwhelming, extremely overwhelming.
Yeah, like there are some services that are trying to do like a, they have like a shuffle button where you could just be like, surprise me and just put a thing on. But it's like, it's not the same as like clicking the TV on and just like, you just like flip to like your favorite channel and you just watch whatever's on. It's different, you know?
Yeah, it's like, even like, yeah, they have some low budgets on there, but Lifetime used to have some nice midday movies on there. Like, and it's like, oh, I never seen this movie, but it was all right. It wasn't a bad midday show. Okay, I can go on about my life now. Like, you know, now trying to sit down and watch TV, it's like I gotta think about what I want to watch. Like, it's crazy choosing this for yourself. Overwhelming sometimes.
Yeah, no, that's facts. Like, so I assume you're not really like a binger then, because I'd be talking to people about this a lot, just like the whole, you know, like there are some shows that are like, they'll drop the whole show in one sitting and you can like watch all 10, 12, however many episodes. And then there are some that'll drop like an episode a week. There are some that'll do like two or three a week. That's kind of my preferred method, because A, I don't always have time to binge like 10 episodes. Like, sometimes I do. Like, if it's a show I like enough, if I jack it enough, I will binge the whole thing. But like, more often than not, especially since I grew up with like regular TV, like I just kind of feel like when I watch stuff week to week, that's it's more of an investment, and it means that like I care enough about it to keep coming back to it week to week, as opposed to like something that's out and then we talk about it for a weekend and then I forget about it in 2 weeks, you know? Yeah. Like it's a slippery slope, like.
Yeah, no, I prefer, it just depends. I gotta like the show enough to really sit and watch it, like binge watch it. Like, Ozark was the last show I really binged watch. But like Snowfall, now they're in this new season. They drop an episode a week, which is cool. Cause like, if I, like, say if like, you know, I'm on a road or I'm busy enough, I'm liking this new season enough to where if I do miss the whole season, I'll binge watch the whole season, but I'm happy they're just doing one episode a week. So I'm able to take some time out and just watch one episode a week. But it has to be a really interesting show for me to binge watch it. Like, and that's a lot of reason why I haven't started Game of Thrones yet, because it's so many episodes and you know, I kind of like, you know, I caught on to it so late. So I don't know if that's ever going to be a show I'm going to get into, because it's so many episodes of it. So it has to be, I don't know, like, it has to be a point in that show while I'm watching that just gets my attention to where, okay, I'm hooked now and I can't stop watching. But most of the time when I fall behind shows that far, when I fall that far behind, I'm never going to end up watching it. Like, yeah.
No, I feel you. The last show that I like binged from like the time I started it until I think I actually finished it. What's it called? Me and my partner, we finished it in like 2-3 days. It was this anime called Spy Family. That's really, really, really dope. It's about this secret agent who works for the government, and he's trying to like infiltrate. He's trying to get at this like politician who's messing with the country and wants to like start war between these two nations. And in order to get at him, he has to get through one of his kids who goes to this really prestigious like prep school. So he has to find a fake wife, adopt a fake child, and get the child to go to the school. So like the whole thing is like it's like about this secret agent man and this assassin woman who are posing as husband and wife, and they have this young daughter who's a telepath, and like neither of them know that they're a secret agent and an assassin. So like the man and the woman have no idea who the other really is, and they're using each other for their job. But the little girl's a telepath and she can read their mind, so she knows that they're both and like she doesn't tell anybody. So like it's like a really silly, like fun, wholesome family version of like a James Bond type of thing. And like it's like I started it. Spy Family. It's spelled Spy X Family, but the X is silent. It's just I think you just pronounce it Spy Family. It's like 23 episodes. We ran through it in like 2-3 days. It's that good.
Oh, I gotta check that out. That sounds interesting.
It's like, it's really lightweight. It's not super heavy. Like they have a goal they're trying to get to, but it's not a, I've just kind of been burnt out on like really dark shit recently. So it's nice to just sit and watch something that's like funny and like mm-hmm. kind of serious, but not super serious. You know, like it doesn't take itself too seriously. And I really appreciate that about it. And it's like action packed and funny. It's the whole package. It's tight. Okay.
I'm gonna check it out.
that's the last thing I felt compelled to watch, like mm-hmm. like consume at a crazy rate.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, for you, as you got older and you started to develop your own taste, was there a movie for you that kind of stopped you in your tracks and kind of, you know, like touched you in a way that something had never really like affected you before? Like, not even like, it could be like in an artful way. It could be in just like a, this really got me. And like, this is a movie and not just like a piece of entertainment that I throw on when I'm trying to relax, like something that really connected with you.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I've ever seen a movie that got me that connected. I've seen some really good movies. I'm just trying to think, a lot of movies that came out, like I remember the first time I seen, I wouldn't say it touched me in a way like you described, but I thought it was a really dope movie and the meaning behind it was extremely relatable. I really liked Carlito's Way. I thought that was a really dope and just the meaning behind it was, he was the relatability of him being a man, or just, you know, a human being in general who wants better for himself. But, you know, when you come back to the same environment because of your limited resources, in a way that environment drags you back to your old self. So I love the meaning behind that. And I didn't see that movie until I got older. I think I was in college when I seen it. And I just loved the meaning behind it. And I thought it was a really well put together movie. And the sad part is that he dies at the end trying to leave. Like, it's just, I was like, that's the reality of it. You know, especially where I come from. I'm from Buffalo, New York. Like, I'm from the east side of Buffalo, New York. Like, so I know how that is. Like, I have brothers. I have a dad who's been in prison. Like, and like I said, because of limited resources, have to come back to these environments, and these environments in a lot of ways becomes like the death of them. Like in a lot of ways it becomes the downfall of them because they can't get ahead because of their surroundings. And it's not always just easy for people to just leave. So, you know, but he was actually planning it and found the woman.
Yeah, man.
And, you know, and then like, you know, they're leaving and he dies. Like, it was crazy, but it's such a reality for me. It's a relatable movie.
Yeah, man. Carlito's Way is so brutal. I didn't see it. I think I might have seen it for the first time in might have been in high school, because they put out a prequel. Like that was like a straight to DVD thing. It wasn't good, but you know, like that compelled me to go watch the original. And I was, you know, like it's a classic, you know, like everybody loves Carlito's Way. You know, I think those stories have always been really important to me because, like you said, that is the reality for so many people. And it's like, we get caught up in conversations of people being like, oh, like this is like glorification. Like everybody's like, oh, like we should want to be. And it's like, it's not always like that black and white, you know, like it's I had Rashid Chappelle on here maybe about a month ago. And he told me that he would see things like that and something like a Star Wars, for example, and just think about how like, you know, like, you know, like those movies both kind of pushed him to be to work even harder to get out of where he was, you know, and like, you know, like, you know, like you watch a movie like Carlito's Way or Scarface or Boys in the Hood or Menace to Society, like, you know, like the list goes on and on, like movies like that, you know, like they're bleak and they're really sad because it's like, you know, like pretty much everybody in all those movies I named winds up dying at the end, or like someone winds up dying at the end. But, you know, like not it's just like it could be really sad, but it's also incredibly inspirational, just in the sense of like, oh, like I'm gonna try my best not to end up like Kane. I'm gonna try my best to not end up like Carlito. You know, I'm gonna try my best, you know, like.
Yeah, because like reality, it's not always a happy ending. I rarely seen happy endings coming up. So, right. You know, for me, you know, when it's a movie, like, you know, like the message behind it is reality, but it's a movie. He didn't really die. And you know,
right.
Like,
yeah.
But, like with movies, sometimes they paint an image that, you know, for me, just watching, it can be any movie. A lot of times they paint an image that's not really relatable for maybe a lot of people's current environments and situations. Like, you know, it's just not a happy ending. So sometimes those movies are necessary for us, because it paints a story and it tells our story, and it paints a picture of a reality that a lot of us face that needs to be displayed more. I like happy endings. Like, we all want to have a happy ending. But you know, that's just not the reality I've always seen coming up. So when I finally seen that movie, I more so was in love with the story and the message behind it, because you know, I know if I would have seen that movie younger, I probably wouldn't be able to put it together as much as I was when I was in college. And I seen it from a different angle. So and a lot of movies like that, I like messages. Like, I want to know, like, I want to be able to take that and apply that to my daily life, you know, because like I said, coming out of Buffalo is not always, or coming out of anywhere, but Buffalo, you know, just my stories wasn't always the easiest thing.
Right. Yeah. No. Like, I couldn't agree more. Like, and you know, like, that's why it's important to tell those stories, because, you know, like before we move on, I just have, you know, like, whether, you know, like, whether it comes to rap music or like movies like that, just, I can't tell you how many conversations I've had where people are just like, oh, well, why don't people rap about something more positive? And it's like, well, because like, this is people's lives, you know, like what are you like, does everybody need to, like, people, you know, like, we always want people to talk about who they are and show us who they are. And like, this is who you are, you know, like, this is what some people came up under, you know, like, this isn't like, this is people's lives. And it's just like, you can't, like, who are you to tell me that my life story isn't worth telling? You know, yeah. Like,
I look at art, because music is art form. Like, I look at, like, I have no business, even with me being an artist, telling someone what to speak on and how to paint their picture, because I don't, you know, and a lot of fans have this entitlement with them where they, you know, they try to dictate, you know, an artist's story, but you can't tell me how to paint this. Like, I'm painting this, but I'm painting this from, you know, this is my talent that's painting this, my words, my production, my work, you know, and I put it out for the world. And, you know, some relate, some don't. But I you know, I would never fix my lips and tell someone how to paint their picture, though, because it's not fair that way. Like, you know, I do feel like there's a fine line between glorification and telling a story. But like I said, I can't tell people what to, like, I would never fix my lips and tell someone how to paint their picture, because sometimes what may be glorification for some people, that's really just their reality. Like, you know, like I said, I have a lot of brothers, like, and most of my brothers were in the streets. Like, so, you know, how they look at life is not, I butt heads with them, like, you know, a lot. How they look at life is just not, it doesn't align with how I look at life, because I was a girl coming up. So it was very different with me, but them being Black men coming up in the environment we came in, they have a different outlook on life. So sometimes I may look at it like, oh, well, or the average person that may not be able to relate to that may look at it as glorification, but your story is very different. So, you know, it's just about giving people the free will to paint their pictures the way that they see it.
100% agree. Like, I got nothing to add to that. Like, it's just, yeah, that's just like uniquely, or not uniquely frustrating to me, but it's just like, I'm just tired of that conversation, and you put it perfectly. Like, it's just let people do it how they do. It's you know, but you know, for you, let's jump over to music, since we're over at the music now. Like, your you know, like, your early influences and the stuff that you were listening to is kind of well documented at this point. So, like, you know, like, since we're talking about stories and like, and just like how they can be like compelling and you know, like, reflect environments, like, when was the first, do you remember like the first album or the first artist that really, like, whose story you saw and was like, that's me?
Definitely Lauryn Hill. Like, that was like the first, and a lot of it has to do with her being a woman. And she was just the whole natural aesthetic of her, about her. I fell in love with that because, that's always been my thing. And you can hear it in my music. I've always been very vocal about, you know, just how proud I am to be a Black woman, and, you know, a natural Black woman too, as well. It's no knock at anyone else. I'm just very proud of who I am, who God made me to be. So I would say Lauryn Hill, was the first, as far as a visual image. Now, as far as just lyrical, or who inspired me lyrically, the first rapper I heard that like had me like, oh, okay, I want to be a rapper, I heard Nas Stillmatic, and he had the song on there called Rewind. I thought that was completely insane. And I lost it when I first heard that song. So that really kind of like, I think that was like the first time I really started like writing, like, you know, just, it wasn't raps. It was more like on the poetry aspect of it, but like,
yeah,
first one that kind of inspired me with writing, because it was just so different. Like, it was a lot of good music that came out around that time when Stillmatic came out, but I think like that was like one of the first I, you know, hearing that album and that song that did something to me. And then I went back,
man,
older stuff, because like I said, I'm younger, you know, when Nas, I you know, I talk about it already, but like, I was born the same day Illmatic came out. So I listened to Illmatic years later, and I was just like, what the hell? Like, and then I heard it was written, and I heard Gave You Power. And I'm like, whoa, like, what the hell is going on? So yeah, he's definitely like the first. Biggie too. Biggie, Give Me the Loot. Just his storytelling ability. I think Ready to Die is my favorite album by Biggie. And Pac's Passion, but Nas is really that first one for me.
Yeah, I could see it. Yeah, I actually did want to talk to you about your storytelling, because your storytelling is great. We could get to that a little later. But so you were born in 94.
Yes, I was born April 19th.
Yeah, I was born in 92, so we're not too far apart. I'm only a couple years older than you. Gotcha. I was it's really interesting, because I think about Stillmatic a lot, because from what I remember, or from what I've heard, you know, I was like, how old was I when Stillmatic came out? Two? Yeah. So like, no, I was four when Stillmatic came out. So I wasn't like listening to, I can't hear you.
Illmatic or Stillmatic?
Stillmatic, because Stillmatic was 94.
No, Stillmatic was 01, I think.
My fault. Shit. Damn. No, I'm sorry, my fault. I'm thinking of It Was Written. My fault.
Yeah. Gotcha.
No, yeah. Right. Yeah. No, Stillmatic was the early 2000s. Damn, my fault. Yeah, never mind. The point I was gonna make is not relevant, because it's the wrong album. But Nas is always a great storyteller. I think the first time his storytelling really affected me was when I first heard One Love. Like, I think to this day, that's like, to this day, that and I Think the World Is Yours are my two favorite Nas songs. Like, just like hearing him write out a letter to his man in prison is just like, amazing. That shit really, it hit me in the chest, man. And just like, the beat's beautiful, and you know, like Q-Tip on the hook, just like, that was the first time I'd heard a song that somebody wrote to somebody who was in prison. I'm fortunate enough to not have any family who's gone to prison, but you know, like I've had family go through all sorts of wild and crazy shit. You know, like I've lost a lot of people to some crazy shit too. So like hearing that really, like that was gorgeous to me. Like even though it took me a couple of years from the first time I heard it to really understand what the song was about. But when I did, I was like, damn, like this is just, this is really something.
Yeah, his pen was different. Like he's the most, the most creative pen to me. Like, you know, he had one of the most creative ones. From a rapper's perspective, like I think he had one of the most creative ones. Him and Biggie like was like neck and neck for me for a while. You know, just because, you know, Nas was doing a lot of, like, from my knowledge, he was doing a lot of firsts. Like, he was the first one to do the style of writing and rapping from the perspective of a gun. That was amazing. I was like,
whoa. I Give You Power is so crazy.
That, you know, but, you know, a lot of people can hear, like my first viral freestyle was over the New York State of Mind, the Part 2 beat. And that was my first viral moment. I did a Buffalo State of Mind and I just went in rapping. I was like, but I've always been influenced by Nas. Like he's always been my favorite. Like he's number one for me. If I like, you know, my top five always, I have different names on there every couple years, but Nas never leaves. He's always number one.
Yeah, I get that. Like top fives are strange for me because it's always going to be like two or three people who weren't there before. But for me, Doom is always somewhere in my top five. He's the one.
The Doom. I got into him like the past maybe like 3 or 4 years. He was special. He was special. He definitely was.
I had loved rap for like, I've been listening to rap since I was nine and but like Doom was like, I think I discovered Doom around like late middle school, early high school. And I was just like, it was like a whole head bust. Like I had never heard anything like that before. So it just like, but before Doom, it's funny. I discovered Nas right after I discovered Doom, or at least I like did my dive on Nas after I'd really done the dive on Doom. Cause I had heard all the classics, but I had never heard Illmatic all the way through and it was written and, top fives are strange for me because of that.
Yeah. Doom was amazing. I liked his Food album a lot. I thought
that's
that
my favorite one.
Really dope. That was a really dope album. He was special. He definitely was.
Right. And you know, like of course you have Food for Thought, which is kind of sort of similar to Food, you know, which so is funny. Crazy.
Like I thought about it after I turned the album and I was like, oh, this is kind of like the same because it wasn't in my head when I was creating it. I swear,
I'm
like,
sure, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because it really wasn't like Food for Thought. I actually just was intending to make it an EP, but I ended up just making it into a full album. And like I was going through, just listening to some music, trying to get some inspiration. And the Doom Food album came like right in my mind. And I was just reflecting because I just caught on to Doom like maybe like past 3 years. I didn't really hear a lot of Doom growing up. I didn't really know a lot of people that was listening to him. When I got to college, I started getting around people that was listening to like Doom. And that's when I was like, oh, okay, he's interesting. But I was really, I was a huge Madlib fan. When I found out about Madlib, I was like, oh, this dude is different. Like he is very unorthodox in a good, very good way. Like, and it's, I was like, yeah, he's dope. He's dope. So when I heard, what was the first one he did? They did, Mad Villainy.
Yep.
Yeah, that was dope. But I think I like Food a little bit better. But yeah, like when I found out about Madlib, I started going and listening to his catalog, digging it. But I found out about Madlib from listening to Mad Villainy, you know, and that's when I went back and started listening to his old stuff. And I was just like, okay, I've been missing out on a lot of good music.
I discovered Madlib and Doom around the same time because they had songs on the Boondocks and I was a big Boondocks fan back in like 05 when Like, so like I had heard, because the Oprah Winfrey episode where they try and go kidnap her, they played, there's three Mad Villainy songs in that episode. They got which ones? Raid, all caps, and there's one more. I think no, Fancy Clown's in a different one. But yeah, either way, like that was the first time I'd ever heard Doom and and Madlib. And then from there, like you, it was like I just dug. I devoured everything I could find. And I've been a super Doom fan ever since, and a super Madlib fan ever since.
Yeah, I love Madlib. Is like, he's definitely in my top five for producers. Like, I got him top five. He's definitely, he's inspired a lot of just how I go into like with my beat making, because I've been producing since I was 15, but like he has a lot of inspiration on just how I approach my production, like, and like what I love about Madlib is like even his instrumental tape, his beat tapes, they sound like movies, like you're listening to a movie. Like he has a unique talent in like turning the beats into a story before even the words, or without words. You don't even need words half the time, And sometimes when like as a producer, sometimes as producers, we don't dig deep enough. With just allowing the beat to tell the story, and adding so many, and a lot of that comes with the elements too, adding different elements into the production to tell the story more. So like when the vocals get on top of it, it's more just like a icing on a cake for it, per se. I would say that's just what I get out of listening to his beats and inspiration I draw from it.
Right, definitely. Like, yeah, like those beat conductor and rock conductor tapes are like some of my favorite things he ever did. Like, I used to, I forget what volume of the beat conductor shit it was, but like, there's like one of those albums. It's like orange and black and white, but like, I ran that like religiously, like for like a whole year. I would just throw that on while I worked, and like he's, like his music really does that for me. Like Mad
It
Libs in
creates a
particular.
mood, and it creates, well, it's not just one mood, like, because I feel like too, like, especially with producers now, like they just create. A lot of them create, it's some dope producers, but a lot of them only create one mood, and it's like just dark. It's not really like with Madlib. I get different moods from him, like when I listen to him, like and even like I was listening to one of his beat tapes. I forgot the name of it. But he has a beat tape where he literally just uses a bunch of Indian samples and flips, and just the way he flips them, I'm just like, yeah, different. This guy's different. I want to work with him one day.
Oh man, I know it's coming. I know it's coming.
Yeah, I
Oh
know
man.
a lot of people through him, like I'm just waiting for that time to come.
No, it's coming. I'm sure it's coming sooner than you think. I'm actually happy you brought the producing up so early, because I was gonna ask you about it way later. But like for like since you are a rapper producer, like as you start to get older, and you and like not only are you forming your own taste, but you're like living life, like you're about to become like an adult, and you've already gone through so much. When did you first decide that music was going to be more than just a hobby? Like, when was it like, oh, I'm like making music, like this is my life now?
It was later on. I was probably around like 21, 22. And even then I still wasn't fully all in with it, but I would say like that was around the time I started putting money and investing money into equipment. So like once I started spending money on this, I'm like, okay, this is more than just a hobby for me, because I was spending a lot of money and traveling, doing shows. But I say this all the time. My intentions was never to be a rapper. I always knew how to rap because I've always written. I've always been a writer. But though it wasn't my intention. I just wanted to produce. And when people, especially locally, was hearing some of my beats, I would play beats for people. I would send it to local rappers. They thought it was dope, but none of them will really rap over it. Like they weren't serious enough about rapping over it. So I'm like, I'm not just gonna waste all these good ass beats. So I just started rapping. Like I was with my friend at the time. We had like a studio in his basement. I just started rapping, and you know, it came out pretty dope. Like one of the first freestyles I actually put out though was it was over Jay-Z, So Ghetto Beat. And I put it out on SoundCloud and I got a lot of good feedback. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna keep going. And then I just started putting freestyles over my beats and I just started getting even more good feedback. So I just kind of went from there. Even when I first like came out and said, okay, I'm gonna start rapping and you know, because I was a rapper before that, but I just wasn't serious about it. There's a lot of things that I had to work on. I had to work on my delivery, my flow. All I knew how to do was just like I knew how to put my metaphors and punchlines and just like my wittiness in order, but I struggled with my delivery at first. So I worked on that for a minute and then I came back and started rapping over my own beats. But I was like, I'm not gonna let these good ass beats go to waste. So I started rapping over it, and that's how you got like I kind of garnered a whole career out of it. And it wasn't on purpose. Like I said, I wasn't intending on being a rapper.
Right. And you know, like you said earlier, you put out the Buffalo State of Mind for the freestyle, and that went viral. And you know, it's funny you brought that up because that's the first song that leads off the first Thrill of the Hunt. Mm-hmm. And you know, like those are some of I don't know if they're like your earliest projects, but they're like some of the earliest shits. So talk to me about, you know, yes, like at this point, you're like, okay, so now I'm rapping and producing, and you start putting Thrill of the Hunt together. So like, talk to me about putting those two projects together and like what that was like, and kind of, you know, like not so much shifting, but like adding the rapping in with the producing and like trying to really like hone both of those. Like, talk to me about putting those. Yeah.
So my very first project that I did that I really had most of the production on, was I had a mixtape called Poetic Thoughts that I dropped in, I think it was 2015. And that was like my first taste of just like, okay, producing, rapping over my own beats, putting it out, investing money. And that was my first mixtape. And Benny was actually on that first one. And it's crazy because like that mixtape, it's a song that's on, like Thrill of the Hunt, the first one is kind of like, a lot of those songs I recorded years ago, and when I met Spech, we just re-released it. So right. Like the song that I have on there with Benny called Tyson was on my first mixtape.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that was on my first mixtape, and you can even hear it in Benny's voice, like he sounds younger, like, so
yeah.
But that was like before Benny signed to Griselda. A lot of people don't know that, like Benny right. wasn't officially with Griselda yet, and I don't even think Griselda was with Shady Records at the time.
Yeah,
this was way before that. So I ended up meeting Benny before all of that stuff popped off, and because he was a fan of me. So we did that song together on our first time meeting, and I put that out in 2015, but we re-released it in 2018. So a lot of people thought it was, but it wasn't new. So
right, yeah.
So that, and then I got a song on there called Champions. I recorded that in 2017. We re-released it. The Buffalo State of Mind, like most of those freestyles I recorded in 2016, and that freestyle went viral 2017, and that's how a lot of people found out about me. Yeah, like putting that together was just me re-releasing so people can, you know, at the time hear, okay, she's doing her thing, she can rap. But when I did Thrill of the Hunt 2, that's when I officially linked up with Spech.
Yeah.
And me and him locked in at the beginning of 2019, and I didn't even know, it's crazy, I didn't even know Spech was a producer. Like, he just came out of nowhere and said, I'm gonna produce your next project. And I was like, okay, I didn't know you produced. So he started sending me beats, and I'm like, oh, these shits are hard. Like, so, and I think a lot of the beats that he was sending me was beats he was like sending to other MCs, but they weren't rapping over it. So it's another case of like just good beats sitting, and it's like, well, I'm about to rap over these. So
yeah, funny how that works.
Yeah. So I did that, you know, and he really pushed the hell out of that project. Like way months before it even came out, he pushed the hell out of it. And when that came out, like a lot of, you know, a few eyes that got on me, and that actually garnered the attention of Apollo Brown. Mm-hmm. And that's how me and Apollo Brown kind of linked and did, you know, how we linked for our project. But that Thrill of the Hunt 2 was the starting point of that. That's why I said, like, that project in a lot of ways changed my life, because it opened the door for, you know, one of my biggest albums, which was As God Intended. As of right now, is As God Intended. Yeah, that's really how those two came together.
Right. And yeah, you know, like you were talking about like how you had already met Benny around 2015 and then linked with Spesh shortly after. And, you know, like that was around the time, I think 2015 was around the time when Fly God first came out. Like it might have been, if it wasn't 2015, it was like between 2014 and 2016.
Yeah, so, like, Mr. T dropped.
Yeah, and right.
It's so crazy because I can remember all of this, like Wes was selling merch in Buffalo. I remember when they were shooting a video. Like I knew a couple people that was in the video. It was a dope feeling for Buffalo. That was the first time I heard Wes too. Like I had always, of course, heard of Benny, but that was my first time hearing Wes was the Mr. T single. Cause I had a friend, he was my engineer at the time too. He was a huge fan of Griselda. When it was just Conway and Wes. And I think Matt Conway was with them. But he was a huge fan of them. But when I heard Mr. T, I was like, oh, this is crazy. And then Fly Guy dropped, and then that took off from there.
Right. Yeah. And like, so man, I'm just like still processing that whole story. And like, you know, so yeah, so naturally you already said that, and most people know that you and Benny already had a relationship, and of course you and Spesh had a relationship, and like they were kind of in your corner before people knew who you were.
Really, Benny, he was the first one, and then
right,
I found out years later, Spesh knew of me, but he didn't know my situation as far as like if I was signed to anyone or if I was even serious about music, but I, you know, me and Spesh linked up mainly because I messaged him on Facebook and I sent him my music and he just thought he was blown away. But like Benny was really the first one to catch eye of me. Like, you know, he's definitely one to recognize my talent first. Cause like I said, me and him linked up years ago and did that Tyson song. And then right. Wes found out about me and shouted me out. And then like a year later, that's when I reached out to Spesh just sending him some music. I wasn't intending, you know, anything from that. I just wanted to get some feedback on my music. And he actually was like, no, you are it. You know, I gotta meet you. So that's how that came about.
That's fire. So, yeah. So, you know, like, so like all of that happens and, you know, you put out the first two Thrill of the Hunt projects and you had already mentioned that Apollo kind of got put on right after two came out. Like, you know, like since this is kind of at a time when like Griselda is just starting to really like emerge as like this force and like Buffalo is being seen as a place that like breeds rap, even though it's like it's been breeding music forever. Like, you know, like, of course, everybody knows like Rick James is from Buffalo, but like, you know, like when did you first start noticing other people like who weren't like the insiders start to really connect with your music?
I think more so like just seeing the feedback after Thrill of the Hunt too. Like, cause I had like people like Wayno, Rhapsody, Rod Digga, Clark Kent, you know, even with Apollo reaching out, I was like, you know, okay, this is making enough noise to get, you know, the attention of these people. And for years, you know, because I've been doing music in Buffalo Underground for a while. And I was doing showcases in Buffalo. I always thought that I was like, I don't know if it's possible for any of us to really break in. Because I knew the talent in Buffalo, like everything everyone is seeing now, we've been seeing for years. Like, yeah. But I just didn't think it was possible for anyone to make it from Buffalo. I always said somebody either got to go to Atlanta, or they gotta go west, like, you know, they're not gonna be able, because I even fell into that and I went to Atlanta and tried to break there and it just didn't work out for me. So like I didn't think it was possible to actually, like, you know, do it from Buffalo. And you know, like I said, we've been putting out music for years. You know, I was a little later on, like, you know, like with Benny and them, they put out like they had like 20 projects before they got on. So
yeah,
they were already seasoned vets to us because they have been doing it for so long. You know, like I said, when I seen these people that I listen to on a daily, like I said, like the Rhapsodies and all of them, like actually like, oh no, you're dope. You're really dope. And then I had Ghostface hit me up. Like, I'm like, okay, yeah, this is okay. Yeah, we're on.
Yeah, you got it. Like, that's crazy. Like, it's you know, and like that's so true. Just of like any, just of like any regional rap scene. Like, you know, like more often than not, people think that they need to go to one of the big places in order to get noticed. And mm-hmm. like a lot of the times, that's what winds up happening, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But or not even unfortunately, but that's just kind of the way it goes. Like, I went to maybe about 3 years ago, I went to Tulsa in Oklahoma for the first time ever in my life. And they have a whole thriving rap scene out there that I didn't know existed. Mm-hmm. You know, like they put they have this collective called Fire in Little Africa. They put out a whole album last year for the anniversary.
That was like a documentary, right?
It was also a documentary. Yeah,
I actually went to go see that. I was in Oklahoma City last year, and I went to go see that. Yeah,
that's hard. They flew me and a bunch of other journalists out to like go see them record like mm-hmm. at the house. Like, you know, like we like stayed in the city and like went to the crib and watched them record and got mm-hmm. to like hang out and see their houses. And just like it was a beautiful experience. I'm so tight with a lot of them today. They're mm-hmm. they got a beautiful thing going on out there. And like, yeah. I wouldn't have known about that if they weren't like, hey, come see us, you mm-hmm. know. And it's just like you want people to look at places like Tulsa and places like Buffalo and places like, you know, like Milwaukee's having a huge moment in rap right now. Like they got, you mm-hmm. know, you know, I mean, like their street rap game's got it on lock right now. But like, mm-hmm. you know, like just like these areas that aren't, you know, like your New York cities, your Atlanta, mm-hmm. your Los Angeles, like, you know, your Houston, like, you know, like there's just so many areas where people are just waiting for a chance to blow. And it's always really, and you know, and that's what I've loved about seeing, you know, like everybody from Buffalo, but like you in particular, cause like, you know, it's, you know, like you and of course like Armani and Love the Genius, like the three of y'all are so dope. It's just really tight for me to see people who aren't just Griselda getting some shine, you know, because like it's always like one person and then everybody else is kind of like spread out, but like y'all are getting your props and it's really dope to see.
It's super dope because there's so much work that's been put in, like years and years of work, you know, for the most part all of us are familiar with each other just outside of music. We have some sort of relationship outside of music. So that just makes it even more dope because we all just want to see each other win. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's really like especially with like Love, like, you know, me and her are working together. And, you know, I remember when she pulled up on me at the studio, I was in GCR. This was a couple years ago. She pulled up on me and she did her verse for Ladies Brunch. And I thought she was dope before that because me and her had already been talking about linking up and working. I used to send her beats and, you know, she rapped over a couple of my beats. I think she used one of it for a freestyle. And I think it was on Bars I-95, but I'm just like, no, I want to, you know, I'm like, she's talented. I want to see her win. And I, you know, put Armani on there. Like anybody I work with, especially coming from, you know, where we come from, the area, I'm like, I just want to see everyone win because for so long we went just not getting any shine on our city at all. And like what people are seeing now, it's like we've been seeing this for 10, 15 years. Like we knew the talent here. It just nobody, they just wouldn't shine the light on Buffalo. Like, you know, and you know, it's crazy to see it all coming full circle now.
Right. Definitely. And you know, like I wanna focus specifically on you because, like I said earlier, like your storytelling, you know, like you got bars, you're funny, you're thoughtful, you're smart, but like your ability to put stories together is something that, like, that's the thing that really grabbed me about all mm-hmm. the Che Noir I've heard. And I wanted to kind of highlight a few of my favorite storytelling songs of yours that like really spoke to me. And the first one I'm gonna touch on is 12 Hours from As God Intended. Cause like Che, that shit is nuts. Like, first time I heard it, like I wrote about it when I was writing at DJ Booth. Cause like, I'll never forget the first time I heard that song, just like such a crazy story. So like, how did 12 Hours come together and just like where do you go from there? Like killing your, you know, like, you know, like killing your fiance by mistake. You tell me where that story came from.
To be honest, like, you know, when I was in the process, because like how Apollo works, right? He works very different from any other producer that I've worked with before him. Like, you know, working with Spesh, you're pretty much in the studio with him. He's doing one beat at a time. You're rapping over the skeleton, you know, and then, you know, you build from there. With Apollo, when I talked to him, he already had the beats ready. Like, he had the sound and everything for it. So he sent me the beats. He sent me 15 beats, but he sent them like five at a time. So the 12 hours beat was in the first pack that I got. That was the first pack I got. And I remember hearing the beat and I was like, I don't know how I want to rap over this. Cause I really was just trying to push the envelope a little bit and just challenge myself really throughout that entire album. So I was like, I don't know how I want to rap on this beat. So I just kind of sat on it for a few months. Then I pulled it back up and I just like, I don't know. I just started telling this story. It just kind of came out like that way. And I remember my friend was right there. Like he was in the room when I was writing it and I was rapping it to him. I was like, what do you think? And he was like, keep going. Like, I want to know what's going to happen next. Like, so I started the first verse. Then the second verse comes and then he's like, no, what's going to happen next? How you going to end it? So I don't know. It's just really just me having fun with that song. That's really how that song came about, was just me having fun. Cause like I said, like, you know, you could tell just from hearing just that entire album or just most of the songs in my catalog that I'm heavily influenced by Nas. But like Nas, I've always been, like I said, a storyteller, because like I was doing poetry before I just even went all in with rap. I just used to just write my own poetry for my own self. Like, you know, it didn't go beyond just the close family members that I would show them to, but I was always into poetry or just storytelling myself. You know, I have a very creative mind and I always had like these ideas of like concepts for songs. So I felt like that was my opportunity with that album to bring those concepts to life that I always kind of was thinking about.
Yeah, nah. And like that one, like that's the one that I go back to more. Like it's that one. The song with Ty Ferris, even though that's not like a storytelling song in the same way.
It's a dope song. Like, yeah.
It's a great song. Shout out to Ty too. Ty's been dope for years. And the other one, Daddy's Girl. Like that and Daddy's Girl are the two like story oriented songs that really grip me from his God Intended.
You want to know a story about Daddy's Girl? So please. I had this album that I was working on before I got around Spesh, right? It was called The Essence. And that's an album that I will be releasing. I've actually been promoting that for a while. But I had the first cut, like the first draft of that album done when I met Spesh. And I showed it to him. And it's crazy because like the Daddy Girl's verses, the verses for Daddy's Girl were on the first draft of The Essence, but I had it more like a spoken word type of vibe to it. And I remember when I heard the beat, I just kind of was like, oh, this fits well over this. So I just turned it more into like a rapping verse. But I don't know if I may still have it in my laptop, but like, I don't know if Spesh may remember, but that was like the first version I sent to him, like was like me rapping those verses. I think the second verse is the only one I ended up rewriting, but the first verse was a totally different style on a whole different beat. And I just kind of like, you know, rewrote it into the Apollo one. But I, you know, I reflect on that a lot. My friends know, cause like when I rewrote it, I was like, oh yeah, that goes perfect over that. But they remember the version that it was before that.
Right. That's crazy. I love stories like that where like a song started out a couple of years ago and then you just like have it in the can. And,
yeah.
You know, like, yeah, that shit is beautiful. And before I move on, because I had Apollo on the show not too long ago too. I think it might have been at the end of last year. So he sent you the beats, but did y'all record them together? Because I know he typically like has people come out to Detroit and they record it together. But so he sent you the beats beforehand. It's not like you got there and then he played you the beats and you wrote it there.
No, because like at that time, this is when COVID was like making its way
right.
Okay. Yeah. So like, I was really just trying to get in and get out as quick as possible so I wouldn't get stuck out there. Because literally the day after I came, the day after I landed in Buffalo is when they shut everything down. And, you know, I was like, okay, I made it back just in enough time. But like when he sent me the beats and I was working on it, that was like when COVID was making its way in. So I was more comfortable just writing at home and then going out there and recording. And I was out there for a few days. So I was able to get it done. If I would have went out there trying to do like write and record, I wouldn't have made it back home. So I just seeing how it all went down.
See, I was the same way with Tulsa. Cause like I went to Tulsa, like real quick aside. The day before I left for Tulsa was the day that somebody on OKC, the Thunder, tested positive at the game. And like that was literally like 12 hours before my flight. And I'm thinking like, damn, like, do I, none of us know shit about COVID at this point. So I'm like, damn, like, do I just not go? Like my flight was booked and everything was paid for. Mm-hmm. I was like, shit. I talked to my parents. I talked to my sister and I talked to my partner and they were all like, whatever you want to do, bro. Like we support you, but you know, it's looking a little, and I was like, fuck it. I'm gonna go. And that's still like it. But then when I came back, that was like, I came back a couple of days before my birthday. So like that was around the time when everything got shut down. So I also got home like the exact same time.
The exact same time. I would have been pissed if I got stuck out there. It was crazy. It was nuts. Like they shut everything down. I never in my life seen nothing like that.
Yeah, I'd never seen an airport so empty in my life. Like leaving. I left out of Newark. I'm from Jersey, so like you'd see like the Newark airport's one of the busiest airports on planet Earth. Mm-hmm. But like coming back through the Tulsa airport, I was one of six people in the whole airport. And it was like it was like everyone died. It was kind of crazy, but
it was crazy. It was nuts. Like it was definitely a moment. Like and that you know that album holds a special place in my heart because I really didn't know how we were gonna put it out with everything that was going on in the world. Our plans. Like I remember Apollo vividly telling me we're gonna put it out in November. It was either October or November. And then when everything started happening, then the George Floyd situation, because I actually was in Atlanta when that happened, when they were rioting out there at the CNN building in Atlanta. And, you know, when all of that stuff started happening, Apollo was like, oh, no, we're going to just put it out in July. It's a perfect time. It's a perfect climate to put this album out. Like, people need to hear this now. So, like, you know, I didn't know how we were going to do that. And then, you know, we didn't even do it like the way we wanted to. Like we wanted to shoot videos. I'm still mad about not shooting any visuals, but the album did really good without any of that. And I, you know, that was my first big moment in my career. That was the biggest moment. And then also me getting a Black Thought feature. That was
like, man, that song is so insane. like that's just such a, like, that's such a big, like, you know, like not even was it a big moment. It was just like, that's such a quality album. Like like it's something that I could throw on and just listen front to back. I love that project. So
yeah, it was crazy because when Black Thought reached out to me and told me he was going to hop on the song, I didn't even see the message until like a week later. I don't know why I didn't see it. Like Instagram was so weird like that, but I didn't see the message till like a week later. And I'm like, oh my God, I didn't even know, like, you know, that you had reached out to me. Cause they told me he had got on the song, but I didn't know that he reached out to me personally. So I was just like, wow, you know, Black Thought. And it's crazy. Cause like the year before that, I said, I was doing an interview in San Diego and they asked me, like, you know, who are some people on your bucket list you want to work with? Of course I said Nas, but I was like, I really want to work with Rhapsody and Black Thought. So like the fact that I got Black Thought just a year later was, that was amazing for me. That was a top moment for me. He's definitely like one of my top favorite MCs.
Yeah, he's incredible. Like he's in a class all his own. You know, like I could sit here and talk about Black Thought all day, but yeah, like you know, like that, like those two songs on that album in particular, like just really are such, like just such a, you're just really good at telling stories. You know, like you get people locked in, and you just offer up all the like. I don't want to move on to food for thought, but like one of my favorite little details about 12 Hours is is the text message sounds like in the beginning, like when you're like texting your man and you're late, and your homegirl, and like, and yeah. just like I had never heard that done on a song before like that. So it was just like, you know, like it just added to the story you're already telling. It's mm-hmm. like just like those yeah. those little moments. And like, you know, like there's a couple songs on Food for Thought specifically that really. That really hit that that really scratched that itch for me too. But of course, you know, like we were saying before, with the coincidental doom shit, like every song on here is named after some sort of food or some sort of mm-hmm. something to do with eating, you know, like so I guess like because you had said that it initially started out as an EP and you fleshed it out. Where did before I get to the specific songs I want to talk about, where did the initial idea to do Food for Thought like this come from?
Really, because I had just came off of 2020, my 2020 run. I put out 3 projects in 2020, and that was like a breakout year for me. So I had an album that I was working on, and I introduced myself as a producer finally to the new wave of fans I had garnered from the Apollo album. You know, I had did my EP After 12. I had fully produced that. And I was going into 2021 where I wanted to kind of like embrace being a producer more. So I had this idea of just producing my own album. So I had an album name. It was called The Lotus Child. And I planned on putting that out in 2021. But I wanted to put out an EP to hold, you know, everyone over. Like, you know, because I had some dope songs I was sitting on. So I was like, I still want to put out an EP to give people, you know, something to look forward to. But I had went so long without putting out music in 2021. A lot of it was, I had some personal matters I was going through. My little brother was murdered that year. So right. I had, you know, all the plans I had for that year kind of went out the window when that happened. And once I was able to really focus on music, like around the fourth quarter of that year, I was like, okay, well, let me just add some more songs and make this into a full album. Instead of just giving them just a few songs. And that really came from just the people I had around me. It was saying, just make it a full album. So that's how that came about. And I had some songs that I was sitting on and I thought was really dope that I added to it, like The Table for Three. That wasn't initially supposed to go on there. I put that on there. Communion wasn't supposed to be on there. I put that on there. And I think Ladies Brunch too, because a lot of reason why I was sitting on that, because I was trying to get Armani on there. I think she ended up sending her verse like a few weeks before the album came out, actually. So, yeah, it was a couple songs that I just added to it to just make it like a full, give them something, you know, more than just a few songs. And it ended up turning out to a dope breakout project for me.
Yeah, it's you know, like once again, like such a solid project. And it's crazy to hear that you almost didn't put Communion on this, because that's the one I wanted to talk about. Like, you know, like it's such like a perfect ending song for an album like this. It's just like really powerful and just like, mm-hmm. you know, like you really dig into some personal shit on that song. So like yeah. I don't want to ask you what inspired that, because it's you know, like for anybody who's heard Communion, like it's, you know, like it's mm-hmm. about coping with death. So mm-hmm. like, you know, like what was it like putting Communion together, and like why, and on top of that, why was that the song you wanted to close Food for Thought with, like going from not being on the album at all to we're mm-hmm. ending the album with this song?
Really, because okay, so what inspired Communion was I had that beat, I had a loop or a chop that I had put together on a beat. I was making, I have an artist that I've been working with. His name is Jinx 716. And I produced his first EP. And I was working on a lot of beats for him, just sending him some options. And like on my run, I was just on a run for like a good week, just popping beats out nonstop. On that run, I did the chop for the Communion beat. And I don't know why, I just kind of fell in love with it. So I just kind of sat, I put it in a tuck and I just sat on it. I'm not gonna lie, I was a little drunk. I had came home and put that beat on and just started just pouring my soul out. It's one of the moments, I don't remember exactly what inspired me writing it, because it was like more of a blackout moment for me, like just really just I'm blacking out and just going all in, and whatever comes out of it, You know what I'm saying?
That says it all right there.
And it was just the first verse I had. I only had one verse, which was the first verse on there for a few months. So, and the second verse came about when I was putting the album together and I was like, okay, I want to include this song. This would be perfect. And it only had a verse. It didn't even have the acting in the beginning and the hook part didn't have any of that. It just had me just the verse on there. So I kind of just put that together. You know, to be honest, I had someone I sent it to put a hook on there, like a singy type of hook, but they didn't send it back, which was probably the best thing because I feel like the acting on there brought the song's concept out more. And actually is the, like, I feel like that's the part that a lot of people love about it because it ties it together. It's almost like a therapy session in a way, the way I'm rapping and just how the hooks in the beginning and the ending tie together, you know. But yeah, that's really how that came about.
Yeah, it really knocked me on my ass the first time I heard it, honestly. Like, it was you know you're someone who's always been really personal and not afraid to kind of really dig into either the things you've been through, what you're thinking about, whatever. But like, that was one where you know, like, it's just like, you know, dealing with death is never easy, especially when it comes out of nowhere, you know. Mm-hmm. and you know, like, dealing with it so many times, you know, like, that I can't really imagine. It's mm-hmm. just like, but you know, just like hearing it the way you did it was just like, it really felt like this is a closing song. And it's wild to me to hear. It's wild for me to hear that it almost didn't make the album.
It almost didn't go there. Like, I was saving it. Like, or I really just was like, cause like, that's one of my most personal songs, I can be honest and say that. So
yeah,
a lot of things I spoke about on there, I don't know if I felt comfortable putting it out there like that, but it really like was the people around me, my fiance, like, who heard it. And even I remember seeing their reaction, like, whoa, okay, all right. But I think hear this. Like, they, you know, they just was like, they need to hear this. So, you know, that's really what inspired. But yeah, it's crazy because that was like one of the most praised. That's the most praised song off of the album. And like, my fans love it. I remember I only performed that song one time on the road. Performed it when I was in what's that place called? It's in Arizona. Not Phoenix. What the hell is that place I was at? I went and performed that. I forgot. It's somewhere in Arizona. I forgot the name of it. But I did a show out there at a festival and I performed it. And it was so many people that was happy I performed that song. So it's like one of those songs that I just didn't know it would get this much praise. You know, to be honest with you, I thought, like, even though it has gotten some praise, I thought Ladies Brunch was going to be that one that people were like, oh my God, this is the, you know, because
Ladies Brunch is crazy too. Like, let me just say that. Like,
yeah, it's an amazing song. And I remember when I was playing it for everyone, they were like, yeah, this is the one. You got, you know, all three of y'all on here and y'all all from Buffalo and y'all, but y'all have different styles and y'all all on one track that you produced. My friends was like, this is gonna go crazy. But the Chameleon song ended up being the one that actually like got the most attention, which is a great thing because like I almost didn't put that on there because I just felt like it was just way too personal for me. I don't know if I felt comfortable at that time putting that out there because it was just too personal.
Right. But you know, like you never really know which one's gonna be the one to blow. Mm-hmm. Like those are always some of the most interesting stories to me. Mm-hmm. You know, like hearing like, oh, this didn't make it, but it wound up being like one of the most popular songs, like alongside Ladies Brunch, which once again, Ladies Brunch is stupid. Like,
yeah.
let's not get it twisted. Like, it's really great. Yeah. And then another, the last individual song I wanted to talk about before we get to Noir and Never, Low Altitude from Noir and Never. You know, like that, like the beginning sample is one of my favorite. Like, I don't remember what song it is, but I love, and if I did, I wouldn't say it on the mic, you know, but I've been hearing a lot of people sample that song recently. So I heard it and I was like, oh, okay, this is cool. And then y'all flipped it into something completely different, which I appreciated just for variety's sake. But, we're talking about personal, like Low Altitude is you really, you know, like you almost quit this. you know, like you almost left because of a lot of reasons. You get into it on the song, whether it's, you know, like talk about like your image and your style mm-hmm. and, you know, like mm-hmm. you really just like, you know, like people were really, you almost left, you know, and like that's like those songs always hit me hard too, because, you know, like as creatives, like, there are some days where it's like, is this shit even worth it anymore? So like,
listen, I've been there. Like I tell this story a lot. Like I had a moment, like, cause that's a true story. I actually did quit. Like I stopped doing music for like months. Like that was the first time I ever just said I'm done. This is like when I was telling you when I went to Atlanta. Like it didn't work out for me there. Like, you know what I'm saying? I went there, did a couple shows. I got booed at one of the shows. Damn. I came completely broke. I was like, yeah, this is not for me. So it took like I said, what Griselda, what Wes was doing with them, and Wes really just like reaching out to me. Like, I don't know. Cause like I said, that was my first time ever even talking to Wes. So like, you know, I guess that's just how fate works. At times, because like I said, when I quit a few months later, Wes shouted me out and was like, yo, keep going. Buffalo need to get behind this girl. Like, and you know, Wes doesn't really do that a lot. Like, so it was dope for like to see that. And that gave me the inspiration to keep going. Like, you know, cause I was like, that's dope. Like, you know, and it seemed like he did this on Facebook, and it seemed like half of Buffalo was like, oh yeah, she is the one. She's dope. Like they, you know, been hearing me.
Right.
So it was dope. But yeah, that's a true story. Like my image and just how I rap. I was told by people, oh, you're not gonna make it with this image. There's no way you're gonna get people that's gonna want to listen to you when you're talking like this. They don't want to hear women talk like this. You know, people don't want to hear women rapping like this. We want to hear them rapping like that. And I literally had people telling me this. So
that's insanity, man. Like it's like, and it's even crazier to hear that came from like so early in your career, and you're finally telling this story now, you know, like, yeah. It's like, once again, just a really like relatable for me. I've been there. I've been there a few times. Like, obviously, like I'm not a woman. So like you know, like I've had people tell me I'd never get a job because my hair looks the way it does. Like I've had these for 17 years and I had friends be like, oh, you'll never be able to get a job with hair looking like that. And I mean, I have my own podcast. I'm a contributing editor at one of the biggest websites on the planet. Suck my dick, you know, but like, you know, you know, it's just like the general idea of like, is it still worth it for me to be here? Do I have something? And you know, like you just kind of being like, I matter. I have something to contribute. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, especially as a Black woman, like you know, like those stories, you know, like those stories are just as important to hear. Yeah. And, you know, like, especially for somebody like you who exudes as much confidence as you do, you know, like it's always helpful to just know, like, hey, like we're all human, you know, like we go through it, like we all stumble, but you know, like the whole thing is getting back up, and you know, like, but like it's just crazy to know that like we almost didn't even get to see this you, you know, like this happened, once again, this happened so early, so it was almost it was almost done, you know,
like, it definitely was. But like I said, like that's, you know, that's just how life is, like especially when you're destined, like. You know, I don't know any creative who hasn't given up at some point in their career. Yeah. Like, it just happens. Like, you know, even in 2021, like I wouldn't say I gave up, but I wasn't inspired musically at all that entire year. But a lot of it was because of the personal things I was going through.
Right.
So like,
that'll do, you know, that. Like,
yeah. And trying to juggle, you know, every creative has went through a point where your personal life is in so much turmoil. You're trying to juggle that along with maintaining a career, and it just clashes every time. So you know, now at some point now I'm learning how to still stay creative, because you never stop going through things. That's just life. The older I get, the more I learn that, but like just learning how to juggle that and still be creative within that. So like Communion, like I said, was that song where it was like that light at the end of the tunnel. Like, okay, I was not in the mood to make music that entire year, but a great song came out of that. Like, you know, one of
which is probably years from now, like, going to be one of those songs in my catalog that will be talked about a lot. So, you know, like, just learning how to stay creative within that, those moments, because, like the time when I, you know, like I said, when I went to Atlanta, it didn't work out, so I came back, and I came back completely broke, and I had people telling me I wasn't going to make it. I had to switch up my style. I got to have this image, and, you know, a good song coming, you know, good moments coming out of those discouraging moments.
Yeah, it's you know, like, that's it's just like the pressure. It's like a pressure makes diamonds situation, mm-hmm. you know. And you know, like, I feel like you know, like, I feel like so much of Noir Never is kind of like about that. Even though, like, not every song is about that, but, like, it's like mm-hmm. the product of, like, you know, like, pressure makes diamonds. And, like, now I'm here making a project with Big Ghost. So, like, talk to me about putting Noir Never together. Like, this is you and Ghost's first big link. How did y'all get connected? And how did this project come together?
So, to be honest with you, it's so crazy. Like, this is goes to say, like, the ones that, you know, you just really don't expect. Like, 2021, I think it was, like, might have been, like, May of 2021, I had reached out to Ghost and through Twitter, because we was following each other. He had followed me, like, a couple years prior to that. But I just reached out to him, like, you know, we got to give him one soon, right? And he was like, mm-hmm. say less. And he even said it to me. He was like, but, you know, I got some pressure on me because, you know, coming off that Apollo album, like, I don't know if I can compete with that. Like, he literally said that to me. I was like, let's just have some fun. Let's not put no pressure on it. Like, so, but he didn't send me, he sent me a beat pack, like, a few months later. So I think he was working on Ransom project, and he had a couple other projects he was tying up. But he had finally sent me something at the end of 2021, and I was in the house. I had COVID. I had caught COVID for the second time, and I was locked in the house for like 2 weeks. And he sent me it, like, maybe I think I was like a few days into my quarantine, and he had sent me the beats. And I was like, okay, all right, let me just, you know, I'm about to just smoke these. I'm about to just, that's gonna be my activity while I'm locked in the house. So I kind of just finished all my verses in like a week, and I was sending them off to my peoples. I think I might have sent it then, or I sent it a little later off to everybody to get on, like, with their verses, to contribute their verses or whatever. But yeah, that really came, like, you know, and I'm glad he sent it when he did, because I was so busy. I was on tour too around that time. I was actually getting ready to hop on the road to do the Food for Thought tour. He sent it at the perfect time because I was able to focus and actually just, like, lock in and get it done, because I was on the road a lot. So if I wasn't in the house, it probably would have took us a lot longer to get that project finished, because it already took us longer than what it needed to take. But yeah, it just kind of came from him sending me the beats. I was locked in the house. I finished it in a week. I sent the verses off. And I think, like, mid last year, he started working on the instrumentation for it, adding the finishing touches for it. We got the scratches. And we worked most of last year on getting a solid cover for it. And that just kind of, like, how it came about. We actually planned on putting it out last year, but I ended up putting out the Last Remnants project.
Right.
I had that geared up to put that out last year already. So I kind of just put that out, and, you know, we just planned to put it out top of this year.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but are you saying that you recorded Noir Never while you had COVID?
Yeah, I did. Like, most of those verses, I think the only verse, I think the only verse that I didn't have, didn't record in the house was, I think it was the one with Planet Asia. I had to go to the studio for that one, but, and I went to the studio as soon as I got out of quarantine and, did that. But yeah, like, I was in the house with COVID.
Wow, man, yeah. That's even crazier, you know? Yeah. Like, yeah, because, like, breathing with COVID is kind of difficult. So, like,
yeah, the fact and you that know you're what? Able that to was my second time catching it too. Like, the first time I had COVID, I was out for the count. I couldn't even. I was done. But the second time wasn't as bad. I was just more so. I was congested like crazy, but it wasn't as bad as the first one. But the Definitely was a house of COVID.
Still wild though, you know. Yeah. I caught it for the first time over the holidays, actually. I managed to duck it for 3 years and then finally, not even 3 years, like 2 years and mm-hmm. 2 years and change. Like, you know, it finally got me. But yeah, like it was, I was real congested. I get it. It's wild.
And the congestion is like painful. So
it was
different.
it's different. The word. And like, but yeah, like this project is really cool, you know. Like it was cool before that, but like it's even more impressive now knowing that, and that you kind of taking your time to put something together that really matters to the two of you. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's just cool to see you. It's cool to see you working with, you know, like a bunch of familiar faces, but like some newer ones too. You know, you got like Sky Zoo on here. You got, actually, now that I think about it, I think Sky Zoo might be one of the newer names that you've worked with on here. And I just love Sky. He's fucking great. But, yeah, he's crazy with it. That Mind of a Sane album is, you know, as somebody who hasn't made it all the way through Snowfall, I still mm-hmm. appreciated the Mind of a Sane album. Yeah. But you know, it's just like it's just really dope to see you kind of pulling all these different names and just like having all these people in your orbit because your shit's tight, you mm-hmm. know. And I guess just like now that you're at this point where you've put out this project with you put up this project with Big Ghost, and you know, like, I guess before I ask my final question, what's next? I never asked this question, but it feels kind of appropriate here. Like, what's mm-hmm. next for Che Noir? Like, where's 2023 about to take you?
So I have like I said, I have my album that I'm producing myself, and you know, this album is more an album for myself. I'm proving something to myself, like that I can do it. I'm learning so much, so many new things and techniques about production that I plan on showcasing with this album, because I've never mm-hmm. fully produced the album. I did a lot of production on Food for Thought, but like, you know, I'm really going all in with my own, like with full creative control on this. And, right. You know, so this album is personal for me because I'm proving something more to myself. And it's sounding really, really beautiful so far. So I plan on putting that out this year. And, you know, me and Love the Genius are working on something too. Like, hopefully we can get that out this year. Yeah. Like what we have so far, it sounds really good. So hopefully we can get that out this year. Cause she's about to have a crazy year. Like, you know, it's her time. She's in that, that stage where she's been rapping forever. She's another one. She's been rapping for as long as Benny and them have been rapping, you know. So yeah. She's at the point now where she's like in her prove it year, you know what I'm saying? So you know, it's going to be dope to see her come full, you know, fully together this year, and just see her really shine. But me and her have an album that we're, you know, we're working on, and I hope we can get it out this year because it sounds good, and I think the fans will appreciate that too.
Yeah, I'm a speak for them. I think they will. I haven't heard anything, but like, yeah, nah, like I'm sure they will. Like it's just been like it's been incredible to see you kind of take this path for yourself and, you mm-hmm. know, like establish yourself as someone not even just like out of Buffalo doing it big, but just like you've really made a crazy name for yourself. And mm-hmm. you know, like on that note, Che Noir, if your life was a movie, what would it be about?
It would be about, you know, consistency. It would be about, you know, just consistency is a thing because, like, it's not something, it's not a quality everyone has, because it's so easy. Like I said, like I was mentioning earlier, when you're trying to balance so many things in your life, and you're getting hit with so many different personal traumas and personal issues, and you're trying to balance a career within all of that. It's not always the easiest thing to stay consistent, and to stay, you know, inspired. So for me, it'd be more about like a girl coming up from, you know, East Side Buffalo, hood, and making a name for herself off her own two hands, because like I said, I didn't have all the help in the world. You know, Spech granted me an opportunity, but Spech is always from the beginning preached to me like self-reliance and, you know, being able to, you know, it's nothing wrong with help, but being able to, you know, get what's yours, but not putting your life and your career in someone else's hands, like, you know, accountability, right. Putting that accountability on yourself. So a lot of that would be like, just if my life was a movie, a girl making it from the east side of Buffalo to hood and coming out and making a name for herself, despite all the disadvantages against her, but making it through all of that and, you know, future legend, you know, because I don't care what anyone say. I'm going down as that. Like, you know, I'm already been four solid years in, like, you know what I'm saying? So imagine I put another 10 solid in and, you know, and me, just how passionate I am about music, I can see myself doing this forever. Like, so until I die. So, you know, like you look at people like Nas and Black Thought, like I aspire to be like them, but you can tell they're just really passionate about what they do. It's not really about anything else for them, but just the love of it. So, you know, I just aspire to be an inspiration for young girls who come from situations. Cause like I said, like that's what my movie would be about, like to inspire young girls who come from my situation. Cause you know, I say this a lot. I rap to a younger me. I didn't have a lot of women when I was coming up that I was really inspired by. Not until I started listening to Rhapsody. Like when I got to college, I heard of Rhapsody and got into her with Layla's Wisdom and then went back and started listening. I'm like, okay, she's doing that and she looks like me. This is inspiring. Like, you know what I'm saying? And I'm a huge fan. I give her flowers every time I talk to her, like, because I'm just such a huge fan of her. And she played a huge inspiration in just like my style and how I move as a woman in rap. But yeah, my movie would be about you know, a girl coming up and making it and making a name for herself and becoming a legend, a future legend.
No kids. That's tight. I love that answer. I don't have anything to add to it. That's just a Che, thank you so much. This was really something. Like,
appreciate that. I appreciate you having me on here. This is dope.
Yeah, no, thank you. Like it means a lot, just because, you know, like I said, I've been a fan since the Apollo record and kind of, mm-hmm. you know, like getting the chance to, like, one of my favorite things about doing this is like, A, it's mine, and B, like getting to go back and like revisit like the old stuff that I haven't heard all of, you know, like getting to mm-hmm. go back and listen to the Thrill of the Hunt projects and now mm-hmm. going back to go find even the earlier stuff, you know, like mm-hmm. It's just kind of helped me see your work through new eyes and, mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I'm just really happy for you. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like appreciate hyped that. To see you move the way you move. And, mm-hmm. you know, like at some point you're going to get that Madlib album. I'm going to mm-hmm. say it again. It's coming.
Like, that's on my list. That's my next thing. I gotta get a Madlib collab, man. I gotta get one from him.
Hey man, nah, like you're gonna make it happen. I know you will.
Yes.
Thanks for listening. Shout out to y'all for making it this far. And shout out to all the Black people listening too, because y'all really impeccable. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and tell a friend to come through next time. 1